Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Lab Talks. My name is Ben Putley. I'm the CEO and co-founder at Alchemy. And it is my pleasure today to be joined by Chris from Kinesso. Chris, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us about what you do?
Sure. I'm Chris Giles. So I'm the associate director across the addressable strategy team at Kinesso in the UK. Prior to that, I was actually, I worked at Kinesso in Australia. And that was in a more of an activation role.
Okay.
So started my career setting up campaigns in DSPs, optimizing, troubleshooting deals. So really just understanding the functions of a DSP.
Okay, yeah.
And I think that gave me a really great foundation moving forward. And then as I progressed, I expressed more of an interest in more of the strategic client-facing roles, which then had me transition to more of a hybrid role. And then as I moved into the UK, I've been here for about 2.5 years now, moved into a purely planning and strategy role
in the
addressable strategy team.
So do you think like that the hands-on experience you had and you learned originally has really helped your clients understand the best way to like address their audiences? Do you think that's probably fair to say?
I think so. And I think it's more so around understanding the technical details of like how something can be activated
and
being able to relay that back to a client is really important. I found when I was trading, I was doing a lot of test and learns and testing different channels or tech. And I think that kind of led me to have more of a testing and innovation mindset when it comes to planning and strategy as well, which is important.
Because there is, I think, people underestimate the complexities of just buying ads online. And I think, with that experience, being able to pass that on to your clients must be really useful. And I think it would be cool to, because we've done a few of these episodes now, and there's like biddable media and like addressable, like it'd be cool to just like understand from you like how you view addressable, what that really means for the brands that you work with, and like how does that create a campaign and so on and so on.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think when we first started to buy programmatic media, it was purely focused on more the automated process of bidding on inventory. Whereas now when you bring in addressability, a lot of that is more focused on the audience, how we can reach them, where they are based on varying movement patterns and what identifiers or data sources you're leveraging to reach that audience. So I think it's just that shift between that automated bidding process into thinking about more how we're going to reach that audience.
Yeah, because I think sometimes like, I mean, you and I obviously have done digital advertising for a long time, but it's still quite new for some brands, right? They're like some brands are still kind of figuring out what their digital presence looks like. So like, what is the, let's say you're a new brand and you hadn't perhaps tried it out before, even if you're an established brand, you had done some before, like what are the key objectives for you when you put together an addressable plan, if you want to call it that?
Yeah, I think a lot of the times when we receive a brief, we'll interrogate that. We say we interrogate the brief as much as possible so that we're understanding as much details from the client as possible in terms of their objectives, what is their creative messaging, targeting, like how do you define your audience clearly, like clearly define it. And once we understand the makeup of the brief, then we can go away and start to think about, okay, like what channels do we want to integrate? What data sources do we want to utilize? DSPs is obviously a big factor, and you know we're quite DSP agnostic, and we'll leverage different DSPs for different purposes. And then also from a measurement standpoint as well, we'd be able to look at the brief and being like, okay, is this more of an upper funnel campaign or more mid to lower funnel, which informs how we're measuring success at the end of the day. So ultimately, we don't just take a brief on face value. We're always just like questioning it, asking for more detail so that we can produce the best addressable response possible.
And do you think digital ads are like good for a particular part of the funnel, or do you think like a good plan can push people through the funnel, which kind of gets like the A star for a campaign really is like make people aware of the brand and then have them engage with it in a way that the brand wants them to.
Yeah, in a perfect world, it should be a full funnel approach if you have the budgets.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you can incorporate multiple channels, I think we always advocate for omni-channel strategies as much as possible. So where, you know, the top of funnel, you're running more of like an online video, maybe addressable out of home. But then as you kind of move them down the funnel, you're thinking about more like your high impact interactive formats, driving consideration and intent. And then as you move further down into like your more performance, utilizing retargeting strategies, that kind of thing. So yeah, addressable media definitely has a place across the full funnel.
It's quite cool that that's even possible, really. And that even you just describing it sounds complex. So like, I'd imagine there's a ton of people that are involved in that. Like, how do you go from that brief to engaging the teams at Kinesso to deliver kind of that perfect campaign that takes someone from discovery to conversion? If
you want to call that. We have various teams that we lean on as well. We have a product and strategy team who are really great to work with because they're always pushing innovation and new and emerging tech and looking at ways that we can, you know, incorporate that into our campaigns. We also have a data team, and that is a lot of that is focused around audience strategy.
Yeah.
So where a client may have a specific audience-led brief, working with them to build out like a custom audience segment. Yeah. That can then be utilized across various different channels. And then even, you know, we've got like a creative team where we can utilize things like DCO, which you know is important. So we have kind of different teams within Kinesso that help us to bring that campaign to life.
Yeah.
And then also post briefing stage, we have our activation team, obviously. Yeah, okay. Like I know you had Nathan on the pod recently, so he heads up that team, and a lot of that is, you know, we work quite closely with them to ensure the campaigns are set up for success in the DSPs just ready to be optimized in the right way and hopefully it tells a good story.
Yeah. And are there any best practices or like key principles that, because I can imagine it's not just like one campaign that's running at a time, right? Like there's multiple campaigns, and like high volume can sometimes lead to like a lower quality, but like how do you ensure that? Like, is there things that you do? Is there best practices? Is there like frameworks that you use to ensure that like every campaign is running as it should be across all those various teams you just described? Because that is quite a lot of moving parts, really.
Yeah, I think at the briefing stage, we always ask our agency partners, so Initiative, UM, Media Hub, to have as much upfront involvement in the brief early as possible. Yeah. We've had cases where, you know, we receive briefs very late in the picture and there's not much we can do with it. Whereas the earlier in the piece you can be involved, you know, we leverage like the likes of our product and strategy team to help to push innovation and new channels and build out a more robust addressable strategy. But then, yeah, like I said, interrogating the brief is really important.
Yeah.
And then once we have that information, sort of going through those different pillars from understanding the ins and outs of a DSP, which DSP we want to leverage, audience, data, measurement, and kind of bringing that all together to make sure that it's set up for success. And once that's signed off, we have a CS to CM doc, I guess you could call it that.
Yeah.
So we may plan a campaign, we may work with various partners who will sell you the dream and they'll tell you you can do this and you can do that. But then once it's signed off, the responsibility is on us as the addressable strategy team to lay that out in a DSP structure to be really clear on like, this is how the campaign must be set up. These are the levers you should be pulling to optimize your campaign. Those kinds of things. And hopefully that reduces errors once we're live.
And what type of like, So you've done all your best practices, campaigns ready to roll, you've been involved with the various teams. Like, what are the optimizations that you'd look to take? And like, is it a case of like, you can pull too many levers or not enough levers? Like, yeah, how do you even go about that? Because there's like, you get so much data back from a programmatic ad campaign. Like, how do you like, just figure out what is the best move to make?
Ultimately, it comes from the primary objective of the campaign.
Okay, yeah.
We can't have an awareness campaign optimizing towards viewability, fine, but we also want to drive ROAS.
Yeah.
So we need to be really clear and manage expectations with our clients on what is the KPI, not just of the campaign, but maybe of a channel specifically.
Yeah, okay, fine.
And then we do what we can to optimize that. So if you're running online video and you really want to optimize your completion rates, what levers can you pull?
Yeah.
Well, you can look at an audience level. Mm-hmm. So there may be different audience segments that are resonating better with the creative.
Yeah.
You may look at things like day of week or time of day and really hone in those specific time periods that are driving stronger engagement.
Yeah.
And then even on like in a contextual standpoint, I know that's really increasing in importance given what's going on around cookieless and the loss of identifiers. Is what sort of contextual environments can we start to work with that is going to drive stronger completion rates or high levels of attention and you know, those kinds of things.
How are you thinking about like the future of identifiers? You know, because there was the often talked about long-awaited demise of the cookie, which now seems to have been postponed somewhat. Is it, as you kind of mentioned, is it contextual targeting? Is there anything else that you're looking at? I mean, I've got some ideas about what I think it is, but I would love to hear about how you're thinking about like the future of identifiers effectively.
Yeah, it's so funny that news that recently came out that Google weren't deprecating cookies, it didn't really change anything for Kinesso.
Mm.
Because we've always been operating with the mindset that cookies, well, they are deprecated.
Yeah.
For the most part, they are.
Mm-hmm.
And of those users who will have the option to opt in or not, the likelihood is most of them will probably opt out anyway. So business as usual for us, really.
Okay, yeah, nice.
Yes, the more scalable option is the contextual route. But then we're also, you know, we also really advocate for leveraging clients' first-party data.
Yeah, okay.
Having them ingested into clean rooms and using that as your, you know, your high-precision audience strategy. We also have a Kinesso audience stack, which leverages various different data sources based on more modeled data on like custom panel panel questionnaires. And that allows us to create more custom bespoke audiences, which can then be pushed into a DSP in a GDPR compliant way as well. So there's a broad spectrum of kind of different solutions, but I'd say contextual is the one that makes sense and it's really scalable.
Yeah.
But if you can work with your client's first party data, that is the gold mine.
Yeah, I think I guess some brands don't have that kind of, I think particularly at scale, like the volume of first party audience to allow them to really address it in a succinct way. And it's where I think contextual targeting makes a lot of sense because it certainly does. It's kind of de facto for some channels, right? Like if you think about like buying a billboard at Piccadilly Circus, the context of that advertising is like central London, ton of shops, a very broad spectrum of people that are going to see that ad itself. Like it's just digital out of home makes sense for contextual advertising. And I think you can apply some of that to other channels, but then you kind of add in a bit of what makes that other channel different to outdoor advertising, because you don't really know how many people saw an ad, right? If you're walking past people, you have a good idea, but like, you know exactly how many people saw an ad if you show it online. And I think like, as you said at the very beginning, like that omni-channel strategy is the best way to go. It's like advertising works when it's little and often.
Mm.
And I think like, and particularly when it's at the right time, you know, I always accept cookies, kind of like love of the game. But I think they're in my mind anyway, like we've talked about this a lot, but as we're starting to see it already, right? Like as blockchain gets adopted more often, or by more people, the wallet as an ID becomes quite a nice replacement for a cookie. Because if you think back to the beginning of the cookie, it was like, okay, it was actually invented to help you, well, help a website remember what you put in your basket on e-commerce. And then it turned out to be a really great identifier for behavioral targeting. And it's, you use a blockchain wallet to interact with blockchains, right? But then also that information can become quite interesting for like understanding, like the value of a wallet could be a good indicator for like what kind of category that is, that person's falling into in terms of their worth, or like the volume of trading, or like a particular NFT, like more brands have like moved into the NFT space. Like that's a cool identifier as well. So like that to me is presenting itself as quite a nice solution. I think you're held up by the overall adoption. But again, I guess to your point, like there's not that many people that are still using cookies. So like, at least opting into cookies, I should say. So like there's not that much of a delta between the number of people that are connecting wallets to websites, the number of people that are accepting cookies. And I think that, at least I'm personally very excited when that, you start to segment those users, like all of that data is on chain from the outset, like it's pseudo anonymous. So you don't need to know the individual. You just know that they have these behaviors, and then it's, but it's really great then for understanding what they might like and where they might be, and I guess guessing who they might be and then showing them the right message for the right ad. And I think that will be cool to bring into the mix sooner rather than later, I hope. But yeah, I think it's coming, in my opinion. It's
like, yeah, you know, it's great. But I think something we also need to be mindful of is across all channels that users may not want a fully personalized, hyper-targeted ad. So it makes sense in those sort of one-to-one environments. But as you said, like an out-of-home or maybe on a CTV screen, they're probably happier with a more organic viewing experience. So I think it's just about navigating that and knowing that not one size fits all.
Yeah.
But adapting your strategy based on the channel.
It's a good point, because it's like you, if it is too personalized, you kind of lose that, like, as you say, organic discoverability of a new brand, and like converting someone from, I never heard about this brand, to I've seen an ad now, I've heard about it. Like it's kind of been my flavor of the month, but there's like a cereal brand that has launched, they've done like a really cool partnership with Gymshark, and then they've done some really kind of witty outdoor ads, and I track their LinkedIn page, and it's like exploded, like tons of people that are following them on LinkedIn, because they've really nailed some out of home creative and not yet gone down the more digital route. So I'm keen to see how that evolves. I mean, this cereal is also delicious, but I'm a big cereal guy. So yeah, I think you're right. The broadness of a particular, broadness is the wrong word, but as you say, like the just randomness of discovering a brand that hasn't been completely personalized for you can actually have some like quite nice effects further down the line. And then you kind of retarget them once they've kind of discovered it, but you kind of lose that if you are being too specific with your targeting from the outset, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And you can't miss out the creative conversation. Yeah. Obviously, creative plays a big part. You can optimize media as much as possible. Yeah. But if your creative isn't engaging or not aligned to your objectives, then what's the point? So as you said, like you can have more of an awareness driving creative that is for the masses. But then as you start to implement your lower funnel, your retargeting strategies, being a little bit more intentional with your copy or your creative messaging.
How are you thinking about creative? Because you mentioned dynamic creative optimization. Like, are there any like new tools you're using to help like create more creatives for brands, or do you work? Yeah, how does that process work?
Yes, we do. DCO is for the purpose of, as the name suggests, dynamically inserting creatives based on different triggers, maybe an audience trigger or geo, or you know, different kinds of factors. So you utilizing that for efficiencies, purpose, even from like an ad serving standpoint, you know, having a DCO strategy is a lot more efficient. But then we're also starting to measure attention metrics.
Okay.
Pre-campaign.
Right.
So looking at, rather than just like standard click-through rates or view-through rates or viewability, like what is the time time in seconds that a viewer has seen an ad, or other attention metrics. I know there's various different ways that, you know, people measure attention, but if we can utilize attention metrics to measure the engagement of a creative, and then have that inform our creative strategy for when we actually go live,
yeah,
great. And we find that sometimes we'll continuously do that across the campaign lifecycle. Mm. So once we're live, even mid campaign, we'll do a bit of like a deep dive and optimize and see what's performing best, and hopefully across the long run, it creates better results.
So from the work you do across various campaigns and brands, like, what are the trends you're starting to see? Like, we're 3/4 of the way through this year. Like, how has it changed from like January or even last year? And then like, where could you kind of see it going? Because like Q4 historically is quite big. I imagine like a lot of what you've learned so far ends up being kind of deployed at scale in Q4. And then how does that then inform what you would do kind of past this year?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much noise in the industry.
Yeah.
Different trends going around, mm-hmm. buzzwords being thrown around. Yeah. We're quite fortunate to have the product and strategy team that we work with who, I mean, I won't speak for their role, but they essentially predict trends in the industry and help us to understand what that impact is for Kinesso as a business and for our brands as well. It could be on a channel level. So the emergence of channels like digital out of home, like we mentioned, CTV, or omni-channel strategies as a whole.
Yeah.
And then it could be more tech related. So blockchain being a big thing that obviously we tested last year and we're continuing to do so. Mm. Decarbonized media. So looking at sustainability and attention being another piece. But what we find is when you optimize one, you're probably optimizing the other as well, right?
Yeah, okay.
Like when you're, you know, we did the whole blockchain piece and we found that also had a positive impact on sustainability and decarbonized media and reducing your carbon emissions. So we're just continuing to innovate and have all of these different things kind of at the forefront of our mind.
Yeah.
One thing that we do a lot of work on is education sessions with our clients and with our agency partners. So just ensuring that we're upskilling them on these trends. And then we'll put together things like a test and learn roadmap, which, you know, sometimes the client will request to test certain things. Mm-hmm. But in most cases, it comes from us looking at the industry trends and being like, okay, we think that an SPO strategy, for example, makes sense because we know that, you know, advertisers' media budgets aren't being put to great use. Mm-hmm. Or the use of digital out of home, for example, you know, something that we really pushed last year and we continue to do so is that element of addressability, because we know that clients now, especially post-COVID, where they need to be a lot more reactive to market conditions, they need to be agile. Mm. So that presented an opportunity for us to be like, okay, because we can run out of home programmatically, you have a lot more control.
Yeah.
You know, you can pause a campaign, you can control time of day.
Yeah.
If you ingest audiences into a DSP, all of a sudden you're serving to screens that over-index towards a particular audience, because we recognize that post-COVID audiences' movement patterns have changed quite considerably. So that means that we can't just run a traditional approach where you're running the same creative in the same spot in a loop. Needs to be served more dynamically. So I think ultimately what we continue to do is just look at these trends and be like, how can we solve our clients' business objectives or a set of challenges that they have by integrating more of our addressable products?
So like it's 'cause I think that there is an approach where it's like, if something's not broken, you don't need to fix it. But then also there's like, you can continually improve something that isn't quote unquote broken, you know? So like, this is a bit of a tangent, but you were talking about digital out of home and I always think about the underground. Like in my mind, like you'd solve a ton of the issues with the underground if they just like spent a bit of money on like putting digital billboards everywhere. Because you can imagine like, let's say I'm an Arsenal fan. Every other week, a ton of people show up at Highbury and Islington, and it's like Arsenal was sponsored. Arsenal's kit is sponsored by Adidas, right? Like if they had digital billboards in the Highbury train station, Adidas could just like take over with whatever campaign they wanted to do during the game, like at kickoff, during the game, post kickoff. Do you know what I mean? It's like Arsenal won by the kit of Saka, let's say, because he scored the winning goal. And like that is like then really a cool way of like getting the right message to the right person at exactly the right time using what is a very traditional ad format or channel, if you want to call it that, that's been around forever, right? Like outdoor is like one of the earliest ad formats ever, you know? So like that to me is a tangent and I'll put it to bed now, but like that's what TFL should be doing to just like improve the amount of revenue they can generate. It's not just ticket sales, but anyway,
take note TFL.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like it's a no-brainer. Like it's, if you think about it, it's like a massive ad network in London that millions of people get on every day. And sometimes you go to like a tube station and it'll be like July and there's still like a Valentine's Day ad in one of the platforms. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's come on guys, like do better, because it's there. There's clearly demand for it from clients to like use that channel. And I'm like, it's just right there. But
I think the key thing is, like you said, a lot of clients, if it isn't broke, they won't fix it.
Yeah, yeah.
But the key thing is sharing that success story and illustrating how that was successful. So in the case of Digital Out of Home is, if you can illustrate an increase in audience reach,
yeah,
because you're buying programmatically versus through a more traditional approach, all of a sudden you're like, okay, like these are the efficiencies that we found with our media budget. We actually reached the right people. It was an increase in incremental reach. Or it could be from like a measurement standpoint, because you can house Digital Out of Home with other channels in the DSP, how holistically has that supported brand metrics, for example? So I think it's just more so about measuring success and really focusing on like how do we sell in that success story.
I agree. Yeah, it's like I always thought that Waterloo was the busiest train station in London. It's not anymore. It's Liverpool Street. I think the Elizabeth line is responsible for that. But and I was like, how do they count how many people? And it's like obviously when you go through the ticket gates. So like you almost have like a measurement of foot traffic at train stations. So like you can then show and demonstrate how much of an increase in audience on certain times of the day, whatever it is, based off your digital ad, and then sending that signal back to a buyer like yourselves could be really interesting. And stop ragging TFL now, but like it's right there. Let's talk a little bit about sustainability, because I think there's measurement is obviously the key part, but then I think like if you can drive efficiencies in the way that you are reaching a certain audience at a certain time, that fundamentally makes an ad more sustainable, right? So like that's, again, we run an ad exchange based on a blockchain. We have high win rates. I think that makes our advertising campaigns more sustainable because it requires you to bid less to win the impressions that you want to deliver the campaign and the message that you need to the person at the right time. But that's just the way I think about it. Like how else are Kinesso thinking about like making ad campaigns more sustainable? Because it's certainly a huge issue.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, blockchain was, as you said, it makes sense that as you reduce the number of hops to an impression, that in itself is reducing emissions.
Yeah.
Our stance is try to reduce first as much as possible.
Yeah.
Through however you can do that, you know, we partner with other SSPs as well who have green auction packages, which you can buy. And then you can obviously measure that through like Scope 3 data.
Yeah.
But then also working with like verification partners such as an IAS or a Double Verify to actually measure the carbon reduction. So putting those strategies in place, and then also whatever is remaining, can we then offset that into projects and that kind of thing? So ultimately, we're trying as much as possible to optimize our supply parts as much as possible.
Yeah, makes sense.
as I said, blockchain being one of those, but also just like through everything else that we're doing as well. Like if you optimize towards attention and you're reducing, you know, you're blocking MFA sites, that in itself is really playing a big part.
Yeah.
Whether you can measure that or not, you can, but it varies. So ultimately, I think a lot of what we're trying to do is reducing emissions because of the efficiencies that can be found in buying media addressably.
Yeah. Ads become more sustainable if you make them more effective and efficient from the outset. It kind of becomes like a second order effect almost of like you're getting more bang for your buck with the media that you're purchasing. So therefore it reduces or increases the sustainability, I should say, or reduces the emissions that are created because it's more effective and the message is delivered to the right time on the right channel to the right person, versus just like not measure. Obviously not measuring is not great. I don't think anyone's doing that anymore, but I think say like kind of the continuous tweaks that it sounds like you make, and that really from the sounds of it starts like from the second you get the brief. Do you know what I mean? Like that is almost then like baked into the entire process that you go through with your clients to ensure that it is ticking off all of those objectives. And I guess, yeah, is there anything else that you do that really aligns the trends that you're seeing, like that kind of forward-facing trends with like the day-to-day business objectives? Because sometimes there's like really aspirational stuff that doesn't quite make sense today, but like how do you kind of continue that trend and that movement towards those trends, if that makes sense?
I think giving back to publishers is probably a big focus of ours as well, because, and again, it all goes hand in hand. If you optimize your supply path, and you're providing more value for publishers, that will enhance the industry at large as well. Yeah, we're always looking at ways to weight our spend towards good quality publications and good quality inventory. Not necessarily away from walled gardens, but yeah, looking at ways that we can kind of optimize the spend that we do within the premium publications as well to support quality journalism, because that's important.
I agree. I think like the walled gardens often get hit with a lot of sticks, rightly in some regard, but also like it's where a lot of the eyeballs are and that's where a lot of attention is. And like that needs to be where a brand is if you're looking to support like the goals of a brand. I think it's important to support premium publishers. Like I think I've said it before, but in my like the best version of the internet is an ad funded internet that's free and accessible to everyone at all times, so you get like the broadest spectrum of opinions on bits of information. You know, I think it can be, you can end up being quite narrow in terms of the way that, or at least the bits of information that are presented to you if you're not careful. And just like it's expensive to investigate stories, and then it takes a lot of people to like create the content, to write the content, to like publish the content on a website, like improve user experience. I mean, some publishers are also then printing magazines, you know, like producing radio shows, TV channels, you know, like they, publishers have a tough job. It's like a cost heavy business. And I think that it's really important that they get some of the value back from that, because they've got an important job of like keeping the internet free and like presenting information about the world, right? Like it's in this important role. I think people often forget that when they reject cookies, you know, like that's why I always accept them. But
I accept them as well. But yeah, exactly right. Like you really want to support quality journalism, and that will be reflected in the quality content that they produce. And you even see it in, you know, when you really are optimizing your supply path.
Yeah.
You see, obviously, the quality of inventory that you're running across is a lot better.
Yeah.
And the user experience is a lot cleaner as well.
Yeah.
So it's a good outcome for publishers, but also a good outcome for brands as well, because you know, their ads being placed in a less cluttered environment as well. And they're probably more willing to engage with the ad or watch a video in full and those kinds of things. So it's a win-win.
It's a bit more of a quid pro quo, isn't it? Like there's a little bit more of a respect for like you and I using the internet, let's say, when it's not like ad. Mm. And then I think that kind of then goes both ways. On the whole, there's always people like don't like ads, and that's fair enough. But you get exposed to them wherever you go. Do you know what I mean? Like if you walk out of here, you'll see 100 ads on the way up to Old Street. So like you're always getting advertised too, but it's like a good business model for funding stuff. You know, like I was talking to a chap yesterday, he's got like this new music platform that sounds brilliant. And he'd like identified really early that advertising was key for his platform to be successful because it generates a lot of revenue for him. And I think sometimes people just forget that it is a great way to generate revenue for publishers in general and provides a really nice way in which people can address their audience for the brands that you deal with on a regular basis.
Yeah, exactly. You said it right.
It's cool. So like we talked a bit, I guess, like immediate trends. Like where do you think we'll both be wrong on this, so don't worry. But like, what do you think it's going to look like in 5 years' time? You know what I mean? Like I've got my ideas, but yeah, I'd love to hear what you think.
Gosh, I really like what's happening in the CTV space. Yeah. Because people will always watch entertainment.
Yeah.
No matter what medium that is on.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're seeing a shift from linear TV into your more digitally streamed streamed platforms, particularly among your younger audience.
Yeah.
But we're seeing now the emergence of fast channels as well. And it's almost like you said before, there's so many ads out there that, you know, it's hard to decipher. Is the same thing in terms of content is you've got so many video on demand platforms that you can choose from, you know, your SVODs, your BVODs, your YouTube, other channels. And we're almost seeing that process go full circle where people are now wanting to just stream organic content via like a fast channel. So it's really hard to navigate. I was really blown away when I first came to the UK and saw how fragmented the CTV marketplace is. But I think we will get there and audiences' user behavior will continue to shift, and hopefully we'll get to a place where there's more of an aggregated sort of marketplace that we can buy on all sorts of inventory sources, and hopefully, you know, they'll integrate with the right SSPs and that kind of thing, and it'll all be more accessible, addressably. I don't know what that will look like in 5 years, but like I said at the start, I think people will always watch entertainment in one way or another, and it's just about how do we connect that with, you know, programmatic pipes to then be able to run ads on them.
Yeah, I think it's a good call. Like the 30-second sound on ad is a good ad format, right? Like it's a great way for a brand to speak to their audience. And I think like you almost expect it when you watch TV. It's like it gives you a nice like break from, okay, I'm just going to quickly pop the cat on whatever it is, or just like whatever. Do you know what I mean? But you're hearing the ad in the background, or you're watching it, or you sit there and your missus does it, whatever it is. I think it's like it sets like a natural cadence to the watching of entertainment. Because otherwise, sometimes you sit and watch Netflix, you like blink, you're like, shit, I've been here for 7 hours, and I watch like the whole series of whatever TV show this is. I think my hot take, if you want to call it that, is like there's going to be some like killer new bit of hardware. Because I was talking to one of our developers, Geddy, about this, and it's like, keyboard is an old bit of kit, but like it's still the best way for you to interact with a screen. Do you know what I mean? Like it was invented a long time ago, but it's really useful for using a computer. Like some people can use their computer without a mouse, they just use the keyboard, which I always thought is the coolest thing ever. But there's not been for a while. Like the mobile phone was the last kind of massive change in hardware. To be fair, the Meta Ray-Ban glasses look pretty cool. I mean, Snapchat tried it years ago. I remember the Snapchat Ferris wheel at Cannes Lions. You've seen like more of the AR devices and Vision Pro and Oculus and those great goggles, but I'm not sure if they've quite nailed it yet. It's like it feels like the iPod One a little bit, you know, like there's a lot of improvements to make to that hardware. Like moderating that environment is quite bizarre. Like, you've probably seen the videos where someone puts on their goggles and then they're put on top of a building and they like fall off it because it like feels so real and visceral, you know, like how do you moderate that? So I think long story short, like you have a much better take on where the future's going than I do.
We can only dream, mate.
Yeah, thank you. I really enjoyed that conversation. I think it was brilliant. Thank you for taking time out of your day to come and chat to me. You're welcome back anytime. You know where we are now. So yeah.
No, cheers, Chris. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. And let's get a ads and abs session in.
Oh yeah, nice. We'll definitely I still bring haven't those been. Back. Yeah, you're like one of the pioneers of ads and abs.
Yeah.
I'm yet to show up. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks,
cheers.
Chris. Thank you very much.